Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Hi again, everybody.
Oh, God, that's a bad voice, Rusty. Hi again, everybody.
I'm supposed to smoke those cigarettes, not eat them.
That's how I used to sound every day when I did blow and drank. It was all... another show of the Suspendables. We live to breathe another week, Rusty. And I'll tell you what, it's a great week. We got to back up to a few weeks ago. The show's great. We got so big, we hired a digital marketing company. And you met Eddie. We brought him on one day, okay, one of these propeller heads. Okay, he's 25 years old. And he's like, I don't know, he could be an astronaut, maybe. Okay, he knows so much. We don't know anything technically. So we put him to the test. Okay, he was a little cocky. Let me get my hands on your show, you guys. I'm gonna triple your listenership, right? We said, have at her there, big shooter. Okay, have at her, big shooter. Well, the kid's moving the needle, Rusty. Yeah. We had an all-time, and it was a show that you and I did without a guest. We had an all-time record download listenership. He doubled it. He doubled it. So kudos to Eddie. So if you need something online, you got an online business, or you want more people to know about you, get a hold of us. We'll hook you up with Eddie. How are you doing, Rusty?
I'm doing good. Good. Yeah, I had a great weekend.
We saw your first video, your foray. Speaking of Eddie, he wants videos from Russ. So we saw your first one. Do you have to be an obnoxious prick, Russ, when you send videos, okay, to me who live in Edmonton, okay? It's fucking freezing here. And there's, well, here's Rusty. And okay, and our guests will know all about him because you guys played together. Okay, here's Rusty. Here I am in my room. Okay, this is the one I really like, Russ, okay? It's about a kajillion-dollar house, okay, that you live in. And he's showing a USC game or something, okay, above your fireplace, okay? And I'm watching the game and everyone tuning into the Suspendables. And then you turn only about, I don't know, 5 degrees, okay, to your bar. And there's another TV there, okay? It's like 4 feet away. Anyway.
I've always said you don't need a dining room. So we got rid of the dining room and added a bar. Yeah,
greatest man cave ever. Look at that video. Our best shows are when we have guests. And I love this guy. We met, we've met a few times over the years, but he showed up at Gretz's fantasy camp. He was hilarious because I remember we were doing little, I used to do little videos, right, for Gretz's website. Yeah. And I said, I got to find Quinter here because he was killer.
It's because I was hanging with Holly too much that week. Yeah, you
were. And I said, hey, Dan, I'm Jim. And he went, who gives a shit? He's like, what are you doing here? Okay, you no name. What are you doing here? And I started laughing my bag off. It was just the best. And he joins us now. Beautiful career, longstanding career in the NHL. Dan Quinn, how are you, Quinner?
Good. I'm good. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Russ. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
This will take our show over the top. That's what you told me, anyways.
Well, it's funny. We'll get into all the crap we've been through these last 30 years. But that digital ad space, a company I work for. We're pretty in tune with this company called VidMob, who has Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat as clients. But it's freaking amazing because once you hit something like on your phone or your Google, right away they're trying to get the data as to who hit what. And right. These digital ad companies, then they go, you're targeting who people that are actually listening to podcasts. So I'm sure it's going to work for you.
We're working on a new host, but we haven't told Jim that.
We're working on a new host. Yeah, you know what? You and Russ have a lot in common, Quinter. No Stanley Cup. No,
true. I got a game winner. I got a game winner in game one, though. But then we lost 4 in a row.
Yeah. Oh, that's so the way it goes.
You guess when Edmonton should have won their 4th in a row. We got them in Calgary that year.
Yeah, you nipped them. So, you know, what a lot of people don't know about you, long career, 13, 14 year career from, I didn't know you're from Ottawa. That's where I spent high school and university. Did you go down to the market? Did you hang out down in the market ever?
Well, no, we moved to London, Ontario when I was 12. So I, you know, backing up, and then I was first overall when I was 16 in the OHL draft. Yeah. But I call those 4 years in London where I did all my first, you know what I mean? 12 to 16, every first that every boy was supposed to do, I did.
And you were down at Joe Cool's or the Seeps in London.
They didn't care. There was, how old are you? 10? Come on in. And then you're playing junior B with guys that, you know, come in their lumber jackets at 4:30 for practice and they've already had a six pack. You know, that was but I was like this, and I'm going to go in the OHL now. Okay. Gotcha. And the funny thing is my junior B dressing room was right across from the London Knights where I'm sure a buddy of yours, Dave Simpson, Craig's older brother was in there all the time. So it was interesting, but coming back. So yeah, I was born in Ottawa. My dad was a Rough Rider back in the early 60s. He was born and raised, but we moved to London, Ontario when I was 12, like I said, in 77.
Wait wow. a minute. Your old man played in the CFL?
He played in the CFL with Russ Jackson, and he went to Queen's University. And so I'd say from 62, three or four, he's making like $5,000-$6,000 a year. So when I was born, he had to get a real job.
Yeah.
And they all had real jobs, I think, most of them. But if you remember, I remember the CFL. I'm sure Russ is the same as much as I do the NFL in those years, from players from Tony Gabriel and you know, all the Tom Clement and Conrad Holloway. I can go on and on with the – but. Sure. Obviously, and then you get the LA effect. Like, same thing when I got to the US, there's 32 teams in the NFL, so you need more than one TV. They don't space it out like they do in Canada, where there's a 4 o'clock and a 7 o'clock on, you know.
right.
But so my dad then from 65, but I actually did a lot of stuff with the Rough Riders in those early years. You know, he was, I did a lot of water boy stuff, and it was fun to be around them.
That's so cool. That's great to hear. I didn't know that.
What was your dad any good? What position he played?
Your Canadian quarterback, you know, he ended up running back punts.
Oh, that is so funny. Yeah, I just finished watching they're called the Red Blacks. Now they have about 9 different name changes. Okay. I just finished watching them. And I think both teams, they're playing Montreal. I think both teams got down to third string quarterbacks, yeah. You know, with injury and stuff like that. Tell us now let's catch up quickly. I told you Russ would be a hard time getting words out of Dan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember. Yeah.
I've got a couple good stories from when we played together, so I'll save them for a second.
Beautiful. Post-career. Let's go forward from when you finished in hockey. What you ended up doing, cause you got a very interesting story about in the golf world.
Yeah, well, everything that's happened was not the way we dreamt when we were 12, 13 years old. And I don't know if Russ remembers, but I was in the draft of 83, which was lucky enough to play that year in Calgary. But we had a hell of a draft from the Eisermans and LaFontaines. And I think Russ went ahead of me. It was the biggest mistake Toronto did. Got to watch all those games in
fucking
the OHL.
Pound him like a post, baby. Okay.
But so Calgary, I go to the West Coast where they never saw me play. He came to the East Coast. I never figured that out. But
right.
That was back when Howard Ball, the owner there.
Ballard
in the stove there, and they'd watch it for a period. And then, all right, we're out of here. But I got out in 97. It was a good time. You know, as I joked everybody, now that I'm 56, I can look back. You know, you can make. I got my first email address, and you got your first online trading account. And next thing you know, making more than you did in 3 years in a day. Trading stocks in the .com era.
Right.
So, but nothing could prepare you more for when the .com crashed and then 9/11 in the US. Mm-hmm. So amongst other things, I did a lot of golf, tried to play professionally, was lucky enough to play that celebrity tournament in Tahoe for 23 years, which was a big focus because you could make pretty good money if you're good. And I won it 5 times, you know, I won it 01, 02, 04 when it was good money. Yep. There was nothing else to do.
Right.
And then I got into golf and real estate, combining the two, and then the subprime crash of 06, 07, 08.
Right.
Which led to me getting asked, I'd become friendly with a lot of the tour pros in the area in Jupiter, Florida, where I've chosen home for the last 23 years and raised my kids. Mm-hmm. By Ernie Ells, so you want to go to Asia with me and caddy for two tournaments? Because my job had been eliminated at the Ritz-Carlton. So that story, you know, we ended up coming, we went to Singapore, and I'd never been to Asia, so I was scared to death. We flew on a private plane with, you know, while he's sleeping, I had to lay there for 8 hours. You don't want to wrinkle a paper. So it was a pretty interesting trip, but we came second in the World Golf Championship event in China the week after.
Uh-huh. Wow.
We lost to Phil Mickelson by a shot. He shot 63, and, you know, so we went and had a bunch of beers, and he flew me up to London. And then I got a commercial flight home from London to the US, but he called me like a week later. Hey, we got to do this again. So we did that off and on, and it led to traveling the world. You know, I've been to China, like as I mentioned, Shanghai, Thailand, Dubai, Turkey, and amongst other guys. So I did that for off and on until about 2016.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because you caddied for Luton there too, if I read
it
right.
I did a year with him. That was, you know, that's when I'll tell Russ. Russ can go back. If, you know, a lot of us that talk about stuff, I'll never forget. We had won. I had a really good run with him. I did 22 out of 32 weeks, but 15 of them were in Europe. And I'd come home every other week. So I spent 220 hours in a coach ticket. Coach seat.
Oh boy.
So basically 10 days.
That's not part of the deal.
Yeah, and no I, cause coach. I had to pay for it. I got a subsidy for the ticket, but I was, you know, first class was a big difference coming back. Right. So long story short, I'll never forget the end of it when I was burning out. We're in Dubai and I'm carrying his golf bag and the, you know, the travel case from the hotel to the shuttle, to this tournament, the race to Dubai final. And I'm like, I'll tell you what, I never thought when I was jumping out of the seat in the Montreal Forum to put that Calgary Flame jersey on, this is what I'd be doing.
that's good.
But it's led to a lot of memories. And, you know, my son's got the passion. So that's kind of what my passion is helping him through it. And, you know, as I said earlier, he's just ask him, he's pretty good, but it's been a lot of fun.
He takes after his dad. That's good. What? How did you get so good at golf? When did all that happen?
When I moved to London, I moved to London. London, Ontario is the greatest town. You know, I think everybody sees it now with the junior, the success of the London Knights, and I think the Hunters have done a great job. But it was a great golf town. It had southwestern Ontario had a little bit milder spring and fall. I always found from Ottawa or being even up Calgary and Alberta. And so it had a great golf course. And when I was that summer, I was 77, I was 12 and I got dropped off and I could go play for $2 and play 54 holes on this 9-hole course. And by the end of the summer, you know, I was addicted to it. And every summer of 13, 14, 15, 16, you know, that's all I did as soon as from dusk to dawn, you know, and I stayed out of trouble and it was a lot of fun and didn't work out much, but hockey, you know, at that time wasn't as, you know, paramount to do all the training that they do now.
When I told Rusty you were coming on, he said, fantastic, good sense of humor. So, you know, dry. We like that. Okay. And I think you and I were on film. I should have sent it to you because when I was interviewing you, on the patio deck of the Bellagio, I might've got to you a little late in the evening, Dan. Okay. I might've got to you a little later than I should have.
That's hard to do, by the way.
But I think you were telling a story about pissing your pants when you were playing hockey.
No, my first road game in junior.
I want to hear this. Yeah.
So the first road game, so I got drafted by the Belleville Bulls in 06, 16 years old, just turned in June 1st, got drafted that weekend. And I weighed about 155 pounds again, first overall. So our first three road game, Larry Mavity was a coach. So he built a team with, ended up having, think about this, Marty McSorley and Craig Cox. They're on my team, luckily.
Oh my God.
Yikes.
What that led to every night, and we would go away as an expansion team. But there was other guys that were tougher. I'm a big Marty fan and same with Coxie, but we had like Ali Vudorak, Ray Flaherty, like Craig Kitchener. I can still remember these guys. And that's who I played my first. Darren Pang was the goalie. So,
kidding. Sure.
So we played three games at home. First game was against Cornwall. I'll never forget it. Gilmore's team. And we win three in a row. Everybody's nice. Scared. I don't know what we play. So our first game's in Kitchener. And Russ, you'll get a kick out of this. All of a sudden, I see the boys skating around. I'm nervous as heck. You know, we took the bus. First time I'd taken a 4-hour bus ride. We got to play that after, you know, that day.
Right.
All of a sudden, they're shooting pucks at each other, and there's no refs on. And so Kitchener, if you remember, had McGinnis, Tom McGinnis, and Brian Bellows and Scott Stevens and, you know, Wendell Young, and they won the Memorial Cup. They were a great, mature team. Uh-huh. Well, 20-on-20 brawl and warm-up.
Oh, 20 my on 20. God.
Oh, so beautiful. You got to just grab a guy, and there was a bunch of fights, and then the only way they could get broken up because the refs weren't even had skates on. It was unbelievable. I go in the dressing room. I'm like, oh, my God, what did I get myself into? Well, fast forward, you know, I was like four guys on the bench, about, you know, 18 minutes into the game, there's nobody left. There's four of us. There were just had to keep playing. I said, Matt, I can't take it. There's somebody. I mean, I'm going to get killed out here, but right. Luckily I got a 10 minute or holding on to one guy, you know, 10 minutes in the penalty box. Thank God. Yeah. But I did take a drizzle. I was like, holy.
Took a drizzle.
that is Rusty good. Not afraid to admit it. Not afraid to admit it anymore. Back then you couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, boy. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. It makes you mad.
It's the new era. Now. You can admit all this stuff. You can be soft. You know.
I was in one of those with Detroit when I was playing in Toronto, and
thank God I got a Grodnik. And he and I just hung on to each other and watched.
Most guys had common sense, but in junior, you know, these guys don't know who you were. You had to fight a couple times in camp, but I always joke, you know, about it when the Battle of Alberta was intense. My first 3.5 years.
Right.
Think about it, Jimmy. We played, Gretz and I were talking about the fantasy camp. We had played them twice in exhibition, right?
Yep.
Then we had 8 games of regular season, my first 3 years, right? So right now we're already at 32 games. And first and third year, I played them in a 7-game series. So we played each other 50 times against that team. You know those games, Russ? Those games would get out of hand. You get Semenko and Hunter and Donnie Jackson and Poplinski and Paul Baxter.
Otto, yeah.
Fatio, Joel Otto. But every out of 8 games, you know 3 are going to be 8-1 at one point, right?
Yeah.
One way or the other. And then it's on you go, and that's when the bench clearing brawls. But that's when I got to compare my stick with Gretz, because I could always find Gretz or Yari.
I ran into some kids who were in camp here for the Oilers. Speaking of having to play against Gretz, you know, every time you ask a guy, you know, how was that? They're like, they roll their eyes, go, well, yeah, how do you think it went, right? And that kid said the same thing. I said, you're in camp. They were from Russia. I said, have you gone against Connor yet, McDavid? And the kid said, you had to fucking bring that up, huh? didn't go well, you know, having to play the Oilers. Rusty said, when I told him you're coming on, he said, we played together in mini.
So Dan comes to Minnesota. I had come to Minnesota. So we're new to the team. We're off to a really good start. And the USA Today headlines in the sports section is the Minnesota North Stars are leading the league in penalty killing. And we're in practice. We've all read the news, and I'm on the penalty kill unit with Mike McPhee, and there's Neil Broughton and Duchesne are the other two. And I think Stu Gavin or something, but anyways, everybody's talking about it and it's big. It's a big deal. And Bob Guinea's, you know, he's skating around. He's loving it.
Blocking shot.
And we're doing the St. Louis drill. And so I'm right beside Dan in lineup. And we happened to have on that team that year, 3 guys with fake hair. We had Bobby Smith, our coach, and Dave Gagne. And Dan just, he comes up, stops. He goes, the only thing we're leading the league in is rugs.
What's the St. Louis drill? What is that?
Oh, yeah. Dan, forgot to tell you, Jim knows fuck all about hockey.
Well, who knows what the St. Louis drill is? Come on.
Anybody who's played hockey.
But it's funny, Russ, when you think about everything that's going on, even currently with the NFL, I just cringe at what these poor, I mean, the stuff that was said that we could say that was, it was recorded, but it was just tongue in cheek humor. Yeah. But I mean, it's just, I can't imagine what it's like for everybody now, especially with the recordings and see what just happened in the NFL with these 2 coaches. I don't even know how these kids are going to do it, but
yeah. Right. Well, the only thing that was off the list was kids. I mean, everything was in play. No. I mean, everything was in play. And some guys, every team had a guy with a Rolodex of information on the other team's players. It's like Shane Cherla, man, he had information. It was unfreaking believable. And Dave Gagne used to rip guys from the bench, and Cherla would be whispering him scoops on the guy's family members.
Greg Berube would not be coaching in the NHL if there was recordings back then. I used to get ripped by him every time you go by the bench. You know, with your hair, you F word, you know, whatever. Yeah. I'll tell the funny story about that. Bunch of New Yorkers in Florida real quick. You know, I'll keep this G rated, but.
No, you don't have to. You can go good.
Yep. To your point, Russ, Lanny McDonald told me we're in warm up, you know, back. This is so cool. Madison Square Garden. I don't have to wear a helmet warm up. You know, I had the freaking, what do you call it? The mullet.
Yeah.
Sure. Skating around. And, you know, we do the half circle shoot. Every time I go around the circle, I have somebody going, hey, Quinner. Take another shot. Hey, DQ, you know, like, hey, Quinner, how's everything in Brockville? So now I think the guy knows me. That's where my mom lives, right? So finally I get over and we stop and we do the half circle. And I always go on my offside as a lefty. And Lanny goes, whatever you do, don't look up. I'm fucking telling you, don't look up. I go like this. What's up? They go, your mother's a fucking pussy. Let me have it, right? And then 20 guys just started high-fiving. They actually said a worse thing than that, but they started high-fiving and then they went to the blue seats. They were so happy they got me. They just wanted to get eye contact with me.
Right to the fucking A club there. But your mother, Jesus.
So they go, yeah, they went, they got us. Now let's go upstairs. But Lane goes, I told you not to look up. I had to laugh. I said, that was pretty good.
Chicago Stadium was the same. They would rip us. Oh my God. In warm up, they didn't have the loud music like they have now. And you could hear every word from the guys in the stands. Yeah. Chicago, Boston, I'm not sure about New York, but they didn't have usherettes. They didn't have the ladies, beautiful ladies in the aisles. They had bodyguards.
Well, you're right, though. They could come down and warm up, though. They could come down and warm up, right, Russ? And just stand at the top of the glass. And they just, there was a half dozen or a dozen of every, in every corner, just trying to get eye contact with one zinger.
So funny, man. Yeah. Well, Chicago, I heard, was the craziest. My old man told me he had a friend who gave up his season's tickets because the guys were pissing in the stairs.
Oh, no.
You know, because they're up in the high seats or something like that. So that's great. That's a great way to go to a game. Talk about the funniest shit you've ever heard, Quinner, out there. I know you're probably the guy that other guys talk about going.
Well, because, winning Tahoe for, 23 years. And you know, I say this because you and I
talk about that already, by the way.
I just want to make sure you knew that it was five times. But
humble brag.
Yeah, but I say this because to your point, in a humble way, that a lot of guys know me for that because it's only been me or Mario as hockey players win that tournament. And I'm not saying that because I know a lot of guys are like Ray Whitney. I know guys that haven't got a chance to play in that are really good players. But for all of the years, the Fierzies, and I'm not knocking them, I'm just saying Fierzies and Aronix and Medanos, none of them, only Mario won it once and I won it five times. So when I say that, that's the third or fourth time I get it. I am more known for that than my hockey career, unfortunately.
Quinner, you told me once when we first played golf, I think at Sherwood, your brother was caddying for you. I think it was the first tournament you won, and he put $1,000 down on you to win, and you were 100-1 or 10-1?
No, I was about 12-1.
12-1.
Yeah. It's like 100-1, but it was 12-1. Yeah.
I think even Barkley's 100-1. I wasn't Barkley. No,
10-1. Yeah.
But it was, and so it led to your point, it led to a lot of stuff. And then, get into the next phase and then meeting tour pros and the stories that, being inside the ropes and under the straps and, with Tiger Woods back 12, 13 years ago in the same groups was a lot of, that particular, I think to your point, kind of like, everybody talks about golfers, that sort of led to a whole other bucket of people seeing me caddy, not necessarily winning Tahoe, but the caddying was fascinating for people. And I did it as a true professional. Like I really worked my ass off at it. It was a job and it was something I was doing to pay bills and it was good money. I mean, the second week I caddied for Els, I tell somebody I made like 75 grand for, and he paid for everything. He said, you want to do this again? I said, yeah, I'll do it.
You made 75 large because that's 100 years.
It was 2009 November. Yeah. He made 720 grand in 2 weeks. So I guess he gave me 75 grand. Yeah. So it was, plus he paid.
Is that going rate? Sort of 10%. Is that the going rate for caddy?
Well, his was like 6 and 8 and then, but he paid a lot per week. That's where the caddies back in the day, the per week stuff, if you're not getting enough, you're sharing rooms, you're sharing cars, it's a, and then if your player has a couple tough weeks, it's tough to pay bills at home as well. But,
Is he a good guy, Ernie?
I say he's the funnest guy I've ever, it was hard. He was very hard to work for after time. But could be a beast of us. It's just a South African way, when they work for you, to answer your question, Russ, if we played at Sherwood and you were sitting around wanting to listen to a man that was and you like golf, there's nobody more generous in conversation and, sitting around having beers and talking and laughing and having fun than anybody I've been around on the place pro golf. Of course,
great.
We started drinking one time when I worked for him, and I'll tell this story. In 2010, we finished and said, I don't know if I can do this anymore. And it was just starting to get tense. So let's go to, we went to Shaughnessy. It was in 2011 in Canada, in Vancouver. I woke up in Portugal. I'm not lying.
Come on.
I'm not lying. On. We finished it. It was kind of like a marriage, getting back together and, we did good. He had a good 16th and he goes, all right. But because of the time zone, we finished around 12:30 or 1 o'clock. So we went back to the hotel downtown Vancouver, Fairmont or something like that. And we started drinking on his balcony and he goes, we must do this again, Dan. I said, all right, well, how about we do the Firestone World Championship of golf in 2 weeks? He goes, all right, now they're an hour or two later. So you must come with me, man. We're going on a trip. I said, well, I had a flight from Vancouver to Seattle, Seattle to Atlanta and Atlanta to West Palm, a flight I wasn't dreading. It leaves at 11 at night.
Oh, so God. Yeah.
A couple more beers. So I got my passport. Let's go. it's 9 hours to London. We're all in the fetal, two of us, there's three of us on the plane. Him and I, we're in a fetal position as a woman with the pointy hat comes on and goes, passport, please. Anyway, we picked up his wife and his family and went down to Portugal. And I, like 2 days later after I woke up and came to, his wife goes, so where are you leaving, Dan? What are your plans? Well, I said, I just looked, it's $3,800 for a coach ticket. I'm leaving with you next Sunday.
So cool, man.
We spent the week and then flew home. But yeah, like I said, I always said it was work, but it was a lot of stuff that it was a part of the book of life, I guess. Sure. That I never saw.
That's awesome. Yeah,
but being inside the ropes with those guys it was cool as a golf fan. Like, you know, as much as a fan, to be inside the ropes was, and being a part of their game was pretty cool.
And big name, man. Like most caddies earn their stripes a little bit and you went right to, I mean, two-time U.S. Open champ, Ernie Els? I know he's one of
two. Two, yes, two British. But, you know, if you get, you know, you're up. We were that particular era, that was Tiger, Phil.
Yeah.
I remember Steve Stricker. We were top 5, 6 on the money list. So it was always every week you're getting paired. You know, it's not all the guys. I mean, Stricker is one of the best guys.
And, right.
You know, but Bubba Watson, I could say the other way. You know, I don't think he still knows my name. And I was paired with him 45 times. Hey guy, what's going on?
Oh no, not the hey guy. Oh no.
Hey guy, yeah. So anyway, but that's not just me. But anyway, so that was a cool part of the whole caddy experience for sure.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
You talk about ending up in Portugal. One of my all-time favorite jokes, Rusty Quinter, is the guy said, I gotta give up drinking because I keep breaking out in spots, you know, L.A., Paris. you know, I've always known something about great players, you know, guys at their peak. You know, you think when, of course, closer to home, you think of Gretz and Mass, all those great Oilers and Kevin Lowe and Paul Coffey. And then I met Mario Lemieux. You know, and when you meet him, I said, how, like this guy, you could plain wood on his freaking biorhythm, man. Just so quiet, such a low reactor, everything, smile, super nice guy. I said, how does this guy ever get revved up for a game? And then when you said you were coming on, I said, I got to ask Dan the obvious, your experiences playing with Mario Lemieux.
Sure. Yeah. No, so I got traded from Calgary at 21. Mario's born last week in 65. I was born in 65. So he's same age as Russ, but he was an 84 draft because he was after September 1st or whatever. But yeah, and I'm sure I'd be curious what Russ always says, always my bar stool or sitting around a hot stove. You know, for me, the three guys that they got, they did right when they did the top 100 and you can toss them into a hat, but Mario, Gretz, Mario and Bobby Orr and whatever order, you know, you decide to look at it is how I've always looked at it.
Right.
I never saw Gordie Howe well enough or, you know, Maurice Richard or Henry the Rocket or whoever else from the old era. But,
right.
You know, Bobby with the health and the equipment that he had, but the way he moved and innovated the sport. And then obviously Wayne had arguably the greatest career of any athlete in any team sport, with championships and records and stuff that'll never be broken. We don't think,
right.
But physically, I don't know that I still think Mario would lead the league in scoring in this day and age by 40 points. If, you know, he got hooked and slashed and his skill was just beyond. He was fast, strong, had vision just like Gretz and could shoot and score like nobody. And it became apparent. I got there, the two stories I tell about that, 86, I get there, he's smoking in between periods, like in between periods. And first skate we have, I lapped the guys. So I come from Calgary and the fitness was in. Well, these guys they didn't have shoulder pads on, Russ. I mean, sure, God, this is 86, you know, where I'm Calgary, we had our helmets buttoned up with Badger Bob. I get there, no shoulder pads on, no helmets, you know, Mo Manta, John Shabbat, you know, Craig Simpson was there.
Yeah.
And it was awesome though. I said, this is a total, I went from there to there. Yeah. But then we were doing like a skate, you know, 3 or 4 laps and I lapped everybody and they go, what the fuck are you doing? I said, boys, I don't know what you guys have been doing, but I was just playing against this team up north of Calgary for the last 4 years. And these guys can go. So if you look back, and I always tell people, you want to know what that era we played in, and Russ, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a YouTube video of when Gretz and Mario were paired together in the Canada Cup of 87. It's an 11-minute highlight video. And yeah, there's the goalie sucked. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But right. the talent that those two and the vision and the way they did stuff. And fast forward, you come back to the, you know, the Mariners first week back. And we picked up Paul Coffey that year too, but all of a sudden nobody could catch him in practice. He realized that, you know, playing with Wayne and Mark, Mark and Coff and you know, the Glenn Anderson, Curry, and it's just those guys. I mean, he came home and you look at his numbers, you know, he was the next guy to almost get 200 points. And, you know, him and Wayne led the league in scoring the last 10 or 12 years. But I think that 87 Canada Cup really set Mario to the next level of, you know, and then he wanted to win. You know, he realized how fun it was to win. You know, mm-hmm. Calgary and Pittsburgh at that time, he hadn't made the playoffs in his first 3 years. So, but, you know, again, if you take the modern player and Mario was 6'5", never lifted a day in his, I mean, actually, you want to go for a run? He just, what? Get to training camp. Not a problem. He said, I'll just give up fries for a couple of weeks. You know, it was just that, but he had the massive hockey legs, you know, that just naturally came and, but a great skater. And physically, I just think that was something that was pretty unusual to be quick, fast, shoot, da da da, and not, you know, but I'm curious what Russ was thinking.
People don't realize how fast he was because he was so big. And
blue line to blue line.
I'll never forget. He, one of the best skaters I ever played with was Borya Salmi. Borya could skate on freaking gravel, and he could really move. And Mario left Borya in the freaking dust, and I went, "Oh my god, this kid can fly!" And Mario was unbelievable. And when I went to Montreal, I moved from offense to playing on the checking line with Guy Carboneau. And Carbo and I were playing against all the best lines in the league. And Carbo, when we played against Mario, he said, "Do not fall asleep, not for 30 seconds against this guy. Do not," because we would shut him down. And then in the last fucking 5 minutes, he'd get 3 points. Like, and he, I'm a huge fan of Mario as a person. And I don't know him that well, but when I have been around him, he's just been a wonderful, wonderful guy. But what a great hockey player, and all that he went through, the illness, the, you know, cancer and some injuries, and to put up the points that he had is pretty spectacular. And that's great to hear that 87 might've been what set him off to the,
you know, there's a YouTube, you can pull it up. Gretzky, the Mew 87 Canada. It's just 11 minutes of cool. And you guys, I know we're both friendly with Wayne, and I've spent a lot of time with him probably the last 6 years, more than I did before, cause he's down here with the grandkids.
Right.
But he gets the story that he gets a kick out of all the time after a couple is, in the year Mario got 199 points. Think about this, Russ. So we're in Philly, the last game of the year. We've made the playoffs. Doesn't matter to us. Philly kind of needs to win, but Mario's on 199 with about a minute and five seconds to go, and he's on a 2-on-1 with Robbie Brown. Robbie's on his off wing. Mario's got a stick up in the rafters. He's knocking the banners down. Just let me touch it somehow, and somebody's going to score. Fucking Robbie goes in and just shoots it.
Oh. The whole
bench just screams.
Oh. What are you doing?
Oh. Like, you got to let him heat up, because Mario had not touched it from our whole zone, right?
Right.
With Gretzky, hears that story, because that would have been the only other player to get 200 points in a season, you know? So it's looking back, it's a shame, right? But this is, but nothing against Robbie. He was just trying to, I don't think he had 49 goals as well, but still, it was more, you know, he had 49 with 48 assists from Mario. You know, it's kind of like, pass it to Mario, let him try and touch it.
Dan, you probably remember these stories from back in the day, like the last couple games of the year, whatever team you were playing against, usually the captains would meet at the blue line in warmups, and they would say, you know, we weren't making a ton of money like they are today. So guys would meet at the red line in warmups and say, who needs what for bonuses? So we're in Montreal. We're playing against Quebec the last two games, and Joe Sakic has 48 goals. And I'm friends with Joe. And so I go, "Hey, Carbo, Joe needs 2 for 50. He goes, "Okay." So he goes and talks to Patrick Waugh. And Patrick, one of the toughest combative, like, oh my, psycho competitive, like crazy competitive. He goes, okay, Tabernak, okay. Joe has 8 breakaways and doesn't freaking score one goal. And Patrick, in between periods, goes, "Tabernak, stick on this." He goes, "The only thing else I could do is jump out of the net." He goes, "It's so obvious." Like, he's giving him a not a five hole, a 10 hole to shoot at. And poor Joe was so nervous because he was, I don't know if he was not, maybe probably wasn't a rookie, but he was really young. Would have been his first time he ever scored 50.
Is absolutely the first time I have ever heard that the opposing teams get together before a game. Are these games that don't mean anything, Russ? And say, listen, one of our guys needs.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's cool. I never knew that. What was Mario like off the ice, Dan?
Very quiet. And, you know, even Wayne, you know, now that there's doing stuff, he'll tell you, you know, Wayne said he called him up. Hey, I got this gig. It's a nice six-figure gig. He goes, hey, Gretz, that's just not my thing, you know? So he was never comfortable being out in front of everything. But again, very quiet, shy guy, but loved to play golf, loved to be around people, loved to have dinners and, you know, be at a big table and just sit and listen to stories.
Right.
We spent a lot of time for about 15 years, not so much, you know, since I got down to Florida, but always went to dinners with the players, always went out after games for beers and stuff that you wouldn't think. Like, right. He enjoyed that as much. And again, just would sit there. Yeah. He'd talk a little bit, just didn't have to be a focal point of the conversation or talk about himself. And English was a second language too. So when I first met him, he's gotten much better at it, but that was a part of it. But he was definitely, truly shy man. Yeah.
Right. We throw it out to listeners to give us questions for Russ, but we get to ask you some of the same stuff. Who was the worst referee during your time in the league? I think Russ, I don't know who you talked about, Russ, but we're asking you that now, Dan. Referee stories.
For some reason, I can only remember the good ones, like Van Helleman and Fraser and maybe Denny Morrell. Probably Denny Morrell, but I always liked him because he was honest. I blew that one. and I also, you know, I'm sure Russ, I've been watching a lot of that. I don't, for some reason, I watched the Proby tough guy thing. And I mean, those freaking referees, those linesmen, what they did to break up those fights during our era. I mean, it was barbaric, but they were pulling like men against, I mean, it just blows me away sometimes. But so I'll go with Denny Morrell. How's that? But I'm not, again, in a good way. I think what they had to officiate in, it wasn't lock and barrel now with what rules were. And I missed, you know, from an old school, I went to Gretz's fantasy camp. I would have got a hooking penalty every other shift and I was an offensive player. But there was always an art to just getting a little tug on a defenseman. You know?
Right.
You can't do that now. And so it would be very hard to officiate back then because they knew what, you know, a water skiing is like this. So that's a hooking. a little nudge is allowed, you know?
Denny Morrell gave me a 10-minute misconduct. My first game back playing in the Forum after I got traded from Montreal to Minnesota. And all I said to him, he gave me 2 and 10. I got 2 minutes for whatever. And I said, I wish you were a homer when I played here. And he gave me a 10-minute misconduct.
Oh, no.
12 minutes in the box.
Lighten up, ref. Holy, come on, Stripes. Jesus.
Brutal. Anyways, Denny was a beauty.
You talked about, Dan, you talked about Mario, if they played today, you know, if Gretz played today, that question and that's been out there for a long time now, you know, with the game changing so much. How about you? You were no slouch, by the way, as a hockey player. You were good.
40 goal scorer.
Yeah, exactly.
A couple. How many times did you score 40, Dan?
Just once, but I think 28 times and whatever.
Yeah. he was a sniper.
30 or four times, but if I did a goal per ice time with some of the teams, it was pretty good. I tell people, like, you know, but remind me to come back to this era and the old era. So I got a pretty cool way to talk about it.
You go, baby. You go.
If I look at, I think 8 goals in the 86 finals against Montreal, which I got the game winner in game one. But if I look at the ice time for those 8 goals, comparatively speaking, I look at the sea of red video, you can watch it. Yeah. And I'm like, did I even play? And I remember, like, you know, for some coaches, you know, it's like Russ, just what you said. That was the most frustrating thing. My best years were in Pittsburgh. Played for 4 coaches and 3 GMs in 4 years. So for one coach, I was always a power play guy, but one coach, you're taking every defensive penalty, face off, you're killing penalties, play against the better lines because Mario's playing against the other line. And then the next guy, you're a right winger that just does that. And, you know, it's like, it just changed over the core years. But coming back to the question, if you do it honestly, I mean, I say this, Sidney Crosby, Ovechkin, McDavid, Matthews, they could have played in our era. Even as barbaric as it was, guys like Russ, myself, would have flourished in this era just as well. But I still think the best players would have been the guys that are at the bill. I think Wayne would have flourished in this. Wayne got a little more room. Like if you ever look at Mario's highlights in the NHL, and there's a classic one. I mean, his first goals. I mean, he was just getting hooked and he still couldn't be stopped. Those are penalties right away. Now you can't put a stick on a guy. So, but I don't say everybody else, our era could play for sure. But so could some, a lot of the guys in this new era. That's the best way to give it some sort of credibility, in my opinion. But the best of each era, the last, since I guess, what was it, probably 75 or 80, when first they started having guys like mine, Russ Isaac, everybody had to have a couple skilled guys. It wasn't all big, you know, Bob Gainey's, and you had the Lemaire's and guys that could play a little bit, Guy Lafleur's, but there wasn't a lot of us, you know, but then Gretz came in 79, 80, and everybody tried to start having a couple of guys that were more skilled players. And
our 83 first round, the average size was 5'11", 180. And we had Norman Lacombe in that draft, who weighed probably about 240, and Adam Creighton, who was 6 foot. I don't know, what is he, 4 or 5?
Yeah, but they went 11, and they went, because I went 13th, but he went 11. Gagne was 12. But you're right. I think Tommy Barrasso was 5th, and he was a goalie. He's probably 200 pounds or 190. But yeah, you're right. It was all
Yzerman. He was
Lawton.
Lawton.
Verbeek.
Yeah.
Was it Verbeek?
No, not remember. Verbeek. Lawton.
Turgeon.
Lawton. Turgeon. Lawton. LaFontaine. Turgeon. Yzerman.
Barrasso.
Oh, John McClain. Me. Then Cam Neely. Cam Neely was big. McBain.
Andrew McBain.
Yeah.
God, those are names of the past. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had Corey Hirsch on last week. Phenomenal two sides to this guy. Absolutely hilarious. Well-spoken, calls a spade. And then this battle with mental illness, which was a whole other half of the show. But Rusty brought up, we text a little bit before the show. Rusty's like, Jimmy, ask him about getting fucking stung at the credit card game. Okay. I said, okay. He goes, and then ask him again. He got back to backers quitter. Okay. He got
lost his entire paycheck on one road trip, two dinners.
I would have pouted. I would have pouted for a month.
Oh. Yeah. If you did that, I said, well, I got to ask Dan about his rookie days. You know, what he remembers, what was some of the fun shit that went, did you get beat up when you were a rookie?
No, we did one little skit, and it was a cool weekend, and they let me off easy. But I was with a very veteran team, but myself and McGinnis were just gotten called up at the same time. But my veterans were, Risebrough, McDonald, Paplinski, Paul Reinhart, Kent Nielsen, Reggie Lemon was great. Donnie Edwards is the only one. I always say this, the only fucking idiot that threw cold water on me in a shower in a rookie during training camp was Don Edwards, a little fucking penguin bully. The only guy I could probably beat up. The only guy I could probably get. And I was like, everybody, what's so stupid? But we had played in Hartford. This is on a Saturday night. We won, and then we flew. It was 84. I'll never forget it because it was Super Bowl Sunday. Right. I played my first game in Chicago Stadium. And I think that's probably the last time the NHL had – it was one of those days when – one of those years when they stopped playing games against the Super Bowl. So we had to play in Hartford at 7:30 on a Saturday. We took some horrendous plane, landed in Chicago about 2:30 in the morning, but we played at 12 o'clock.
Oh, no.
In Chicago, after a 7 o'clock game the night before to be done by the Super Bowl, maybe 1 o'clock. Don't quote me. But it was my first game and it went well. And so we ended up going back to this hotel and we had a bunch of beers to watch the Super Bowl. But the rookies had to do a skit. But that was all I had to do. I was lucky and pretty good as a veteran. I think I got some clippers on Robbie Brown's hair because he needed them and he's never grown back. He's got plugs now. I always felt bad about that. But what about you, Russ? Did they get you in Toronto?
They got me in Toronto. Yeah. They shaved me in Vancouver on the road and they weren't allowed to. So I'll tell you the backstory on it. Jeff Jackson, Todd Gill, myself and Dan Hodgson, they are all going to get initiated. And they said, whoever goes first, you'll get it. You won't get it as bad as the second and third and fourth guy. So fourth guy is really going to get it bad. So Jeff Jackson puts his hands up. We're in St. Louis. It's pregame skate. It's after pregame skate and they butcher him. Oh, I mean, it is so bad. And he's got tears in his eyes. He gets on the bus and Jerry McNamara, GM, stands up and says, that will be the last time a Toronto Maple Leaf gets initiated as long as I'm the general manager on this team. And it'll be no more. This is ridiculous. And I inside, I'm like cheering and I'm and freaking poor you Jeff.
Lucky prick.
But yeah, Jeff's bawling. So what they did with me, they just shaved my balls because they said, if you tell McNamara, we'll get you or you will. But so they just shaved my balls and that was it. So thank God.
Yeah. Could you imagine a kid saying that nowadays?
Yeah.
They just shaved my balls. Yeah.
Well, I always said quitter. Okay. That sounds funny, but who draws the short straw? Who's actually going to shave the guy's balls?
We did it in junior. And what you do is you had the guy put it in a skate in a noose, and then you didn't have to touch it. So you just hold it up.
Yeah.
You can move it around.
Yeah.
In junior, that's what was prevalent. Yeah. Junior was when I was scared to death. But then I went into Mav. I said, I don't know what these guys are going to do to me. You saw the guys around my team.
Right.
Luckily, though, we were most all rookies.
Yeah.
And none of the guys had played in the OHL. So I said, there's nobody here should be able to initiate me. He goes, he finally told him, nobody can do anything.
I left that part out. They take a skate lace and tie your unit up. And that's how they pull. That's how they don't touch you with their hands.
Jesus.
Yeah. What did you do? How did they initiate you, Jimmy?
They shaved his head.
They used to just all stand in front of me and fucking kick me in the bag. That's how I got it. Yeah. And throat punch. Yeah. Get him to shut up. Yeah. Get him to shut up. Well, the worst initiation I got was we went to Lachute. The Oilers won the cup. Kevin Lowe's from there. Speaking of golf tournament, you've played in a million. I've never seen this. And I'm a golf fanatic. It's a 36 hole course, old course, Lachute Country Club. Great. Mario was there. Bunch of guys. They have a double shotgun, Quinner. So a morning and an afternoon shotgun on both 18s. So you're talking about 600 people playing in this fucking golf tournament. Okay. Something like that. 144 day in the morning and after. It was crazy. Anyway,
as Russell say those, I used to say those are fun till you did them about four times.
Yeah, exactly. Then you're done. Anyway, we had, there was a Thundercraft was a boat company then, and they sponsored Kevin's event. And we cruised on the St. Lawrence with the Stanley Cup. And you go right by these waterfront bars, like really come within 5 feet. And I was hammered. And my brother was talking to Jesse Lowe. And I was, you know, I was behind Jesse as she couldn't see me. And I kept dropping my shorts, you know, so my brother could, you know, see my junk while he was talking to Mrs. Lowe. And then at the end of it, Kevin told me to knock it off. He said, knock it off. Don't do that again. I said, oh, fuck, relax. Okay. And I did it again. And my brother and Kevin stripped me naked, okay, totally naked, and held me up when we drove by every bar, you know, so like about 4 feet. So I never did it again, Quinter. That was the end. I never did it again.
Tough love,
man. You got your son. You're watching. We get to talk to Russ a lot about him as a parent with you know, kids who are great athletes. His daughter, son Lawton, we're anxiously watching his career to see how it goes. And you got a son who looks like he's going to be a promising golfer. And then I hear you're at every event and I'm going, hey, stand back, Dad. Stand back. What are you doing? Okay. But then I said, no, this guy's smart. Is Quinter smart? How are you handling that as a parent?
I'm going to be honest. It's really hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to, you know, let him know, hey, that's not acceptable. But he can see your, you know, golf, he can see your body language, and,
right.
And then you don't want him to get down. And, you know, then, you know, if I'm there, the first person he looks at when he makes a good shot, he looks, you know, see where his dad is.
Sure.
So it's a trick box. This weekend I didn't go, we had a tournament, but you know, we actually started a little brouhaha. We played against each other on Friday and he said a couple of things. He goes, you keep it up, I'm not going to let you take me.
I went, ooh,
what did you say?
What?
Ooh. I said, I'm not going to let you take me. I said, how did you come up with that? You're 15 years old. You're not going to let me take you. Like, it's my privilege to take you to a golf tournament, you know, 30 minutes from our house. So it was funny. I said, how about this? I'm not going, but it's a trick box, especially golf, because it's, you know, there's mood swings and
right.
You know, you're not sitting, they can see you the whole time you're there. But I've done a decent job, and I've also told, you know, I'm trying to do the stuff. I mean, I'm going to love him if he shoots 90, if he shoots 70,
right.
You know, it's mm-hmm. just the chances of making it are slim and none. And if you work at it, I'll back you. And, you know, he's been in the gym and he's been, he doesn't eat well just yet, but he's trying to be fit. He loves to practice and, you know, play the right way. And in golf, you know, I mean, how, for me, I broke clubs all the time when I was his age, but if I see him do it, you know, I got to crack down. But, and the other side of it, you know, to ask your question and to be honest with you, and Russell probably attest to him, my parents, and I talked to Wayne about it. No, I got dropped off and then they picked you up later. You didn't sit there and obsess over what your 14 or 15 year old are doing. So, so I'm looking forward to him driving, cause then I can pick and choose my spots. That's in about a year.
Right.
But in the interim, when you got to go, like I'm in the clubhouse right now while he's out playing, but I'm not watching.
So. Right. Right.
I don't know if you did this with your daughters, Quinter, but, on their 16th birthday, we drove them to the DMV to get their driver's license.
That's funny.
Oh, fuck. Cause when you live in LA and the kids go to practice, it's like nothing's 10 minutes. Everything's a half hour, 45 minute drive. So it's a blessing when the kids get them. And I love going to watch them play practice. I don't need to watch them practice every day. So it's when he gets that license, it'll be good.
Yeah. In Florida, I got a 23 and a 22 year old daughter that, you know, they did cross country. So they did the fun things. Yeah. Not really.
Yeah. Fuck. Cross country.
Let me go watch a cross country race. And then, but then my other daughter, the second one was all county district lacrosse player, but it was great in her senior year. She says to me, I said, well, I'm just looking at all the travel stuff. She goes, Dad, listen to me. I said, what? She said, I'm going to go to the University of Florida. I put in for Florida State. And when I go to University of Florida, I'm not playing another minute of lacrosse. Save your money. I'll play good as senior, but I just want to have fun. And when I go to college, I want to be a student. I don't want to be going to practice after school. So she was great about that. But coming back to what you're saying, Russ, I mean, there's been times here in Florida, it's so hot.
Yeah.
You're sitting there going, oh my God.
Right, right.
And wait till you watch Gretz going to be a grandpa going to watch his little grandkids playing down here.
Yeah. He'll be toast. He'll be toast in about an hour.
Maybe they will be hockey players so it can be in the cold arena.
Get in the rink, yeah.
I got tuned up by my kid. He was in baseball and I loved it. He made all his teams when he was really young because he was accurate, right? They're always looking for a pitcher, right? Because you go to these ball games where they can't pitch. It takes 10 minutes between each pitch, you know, when it gets over the catcher. Anyway, he did it for years. I was like, way to go, kid. Yeah, cheering and all that stuff. And then he threw his shit in the trunk. And after a game, I said, what's up? He goes, Dad, I only play baseball because you like it. Well, that was the end of the baseball deal after that, you know.
Yeah. That's good. I mean, that's what I'd say to all these parents. It's my third. So I've had this for 10, 12, 15 years, pretty much. I mean, the chances of these parents to see these big dollar signs and the chance that we made it as Canadians into a sport that we played, let alone now, it's just beyond. And the hockey in Florida, these poor kids and parents are chasing it. Chickering's kid made it and a kid named Gus Cousy, but there's been very few Floridians and they put a ton. I mean, like their lives stopped to chase it. And it's all sports. But then, you know, I told my son, I saw a pretty cool yesterday. I went to watch a Steeler game and I live in a baseball mecca as well. And there were all the number one non just before college kids were all in down here playing where the Cardinals and the Marlins have spring training. It's called Roger Dean Stadium. It's about a mile from my house. So anyway, they were all here for 4 days in this big tournament. And at lunch, there comes this, and I said to my buddy, I said, I guarantee you that's an agent and this guy that's going to help him. And that's the kid and his dad. And this kid. So the kid sitting there but it gave me goosebumps. It gave me goosebumps just now to think of how this dad sat there with this smile and he was so proud and his hands were crossed, listening to these guys grill this kid, and his kid was coming back with questions and answers. And turns out the kid's a phenom. He's going to the University of Florida, which is a very great, one of the best baseball schools in the country. The guy gave him great advice. He said, don't worry about getting drafted. Don't worry about all that stuff. It'll take care of it. Don't worry about scouts. You know, as Russell said, I don't remember anybody being, I never asked anybody if I was being scouted. You know, right. Next thing you know, I was number one overall in the OHL draft. And same in the NHL. Yeah. And I'm just saying, anybody that plays like that ain't going to make it. You know? So,
and the best advice for parents is, I was just talking to a couple of dads in Victoria, the BC this summer about their young kids. And they were talking more about the parents and how obnoxious they were. And I said, a lady gave me some advice when my son started playing hockey at 7 years old in Victoria. And she was very relaxed while all the other parents were psychos. And she already had two kids go through hockey. And she says, everybody thinks at 7 and 8, their kids got a shot because they all look the same on the ice. By the time they hit 15 and 16, you know who's going to get go to college, you know who's going to go to junior. And the kids who aren't And so as the parent, as the kid gets older, the parents start to relax. But when they're 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, yeah. 12, whatever, everybody's like, oh my God, my kid's going to the NHL. Right. I just got to put more money in or more ice time or more training or more of this. And it's not true.
But it's like even Gret said, and I mean, I'm more asking that I know the answer. Cause I said it to my son the other day, but you know, when we were kids, my parents couldn't afford hockey that these kids in Canada got to pay for now. That's one. Two, that said, if you can, and you see what salaries a guy that can play 10 years makes now, you know, there's no 4-year education that's going to teach you that by the age of 30, right. You know, you can make average $3-5 million a year. And whereas I think I got $100,000 to sign and signed for a 90-90-100, you know, 1983 and thought that was the cat's meow. But
right
now it's, you know, it's $1 million signing bonus if you're good. You know, so it's a trick box to know when your kids got it or not because of the amount of money that's out there to be flashed.
Right.
And coming back to the story I said, where I caught myself, you know, the kid, what's his name? Won the Patrick Candley won the tour championship a couple of weeks ago, $15 million. And what I think, I said, that caddy just made $1.5 million, bro. Yeah. And, and my son goes, what do you mean by that? I said, well, whoever you become good friends with these good players, because you know what? In 5 years, if you can't make it, one of your friends could. That's a nice little gig.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dead single, work 26 weeks a year and make, smart. That was $1.5 million for, you know, 2 weeks. So and I went, no, get your school. I take it back.
Saddest story ever that I've heard about the caddy thing. So I got a call from Gretz. He said, Jimmy, you got to bill at this kid. The Canadian Open was at my club here at the Mayfair for women's Canadian Open. You got to bill at this kid. She doesn't have any money. And Russ, you know this story. And it was Daniel Kang. So I fell in love with this kid. She was great. She stayed a week, made the cut, followed her everywhere. It was great. So I get to follow her now. And then Gretz phoned me again. Jimmy, this kid's got to stay at your place. He's coming up to play in a Canadian tour event. It was in Edmonton. And nice kid. Nice kid. You know, he's just starting out. In fact, he was so young starting out that Gretz got him an exemption into the event. He wanted to try and make it as a pro. So the kid comes, stays here, and I pick him up and drive around, and he misses the cut. Okay. Nice kid. And when I find out this story, Quinner, okay, he said, yeah, I've always wanted to, you know, I'm going after my dream to be a golfer. I was on a scholarship at Arizona State. And I was a caddy for John Rahm, but I gave that up because I wanted to try and make it on the tour. How's it going, pal? How's it going? Yeah. Okay.
But it's funny when you mentioned that. I'm sure Russ, because he lived in California and the whole Sherwood, it's just getting to know, you see, like Wayne, the last 6 years and his kids, he just had another grandkid. But is there anybody that always tries to do something for somebody like Wayne?
Always, the most generous human being I've ever met in my life.
I mean, it's like he says, as soon as he hears your son, oh, I'll get him in Dustin's tournament. Oh, does he need any wedges? Like, no, we're good, bud.
Yeah.
I mean, but to your point, you go, oh, that Matt Wolf, he's good friends with Tristan, my son, and Trevor. Oh, he grew up with that kid. And right. Like, they all, their house was theirs. And mm-hmm. if they needed a nudge or an assist in anything, I mean, I just laugh at it because anybody, anything in any sport that comes around right. and that he can help, he's going
to
try.
And anyone they touch seems to have success. I was there a few years ago at their place and a kid named Sean Crocker was sitting at the table. This kid's a mainstay on the European tour. By the way, as we speak, Rusty, check your phone. The great one is wishing you happy Thanksgiving, Quinn.
I told him I was going on with you guys nice. At 4. He texted all three of us. I told him I was going on at 4 with you guys. He just texted us. So
nice.
I got the same thing. But coming back to what you said about how everybody does well, because Gretz taught them, if you're going to marry Janet, you got to make a lot.
What were you ever going to be a coach or color analyst or all these post careers of guys now, speaking of Gretz and a bunch of other guys have taken on gigs.
I think for guys like me or Russ, you know, at least me anyway, you know, Gretz and some of the guys that dove right into it, that stayed in the circle of it. You get outside that inner circle, it's very hard to crack back in and, you know, take up, you know, with a family. And for me, I was lucky enough where I was 15 years into the golf stuff where I was till like, you know, basically 19, 20 years where I had stuff that I could do what could make the same compensation that particular role might play.
Right.
To say that looking back, look at these guys that come out that made $70 million. They go right back into coaching or something. But they've thought it through that this is all they know, you know, this is all they're interested in. And I don't think we grew up like that, but And to be honest, I got a few bridges that are still burning, so I'm sure it'd be tough to go interview everywhere.
On the next episode of the Suspendable. What are you doing now, Dan? How do you spend all your time, Quinter?
Well, just driving my kid around two, three times a day. But no, I work for a company called the ID Fund. Through, you know, 25, 30 new reinventions every 5-7 years. It's been the coolest thing. It's a great group of guys that love hockey, and it's not a dedicated fund. So it's not a tough ask. And it's just to sort of introduce new people to the ideas. I've been doing it for about 2 years, and it's been just terrific. And
so it's like a wealth management thing you're doing. Sorry?
No, it's investor directed. So let's say Russ, we would have loved them when we were playing. You'd have an app, and we come up with an idea like this VidMob. If you can pull up VidMob, so we just offered that to some of our investors. It's pre IPO, but it's very developed. It's not seed money. Like, you know, all the stuff we invested in, I got a wallpaper of stuff that I put $100,000 into that became zero. I got a whole wallpaper of it.
No.
And but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, these are developed legitimate companies. And the only funny part was I started just before COVID, and he goes, "All right, you ready to make some calls?" I said, "Do you see what's going on in the world right now?"
Right, bad timing. Yeah.
We did about 13, 14 deals in this time. It's good because it's safer. And, you know, we had pre-IPO of Topgolf and stuff like that. Some pretty cool stuff. We got one in the NHL's partnered up called Fivo. We just did last week. So it's if an investor doesn't want to do it, they don't have to do it. It's completely their decision. So it's not a dedicated fund, if that makes sense. So, it's pretty cool. Like the deal we did, probably shouldn't say it, but one of the key investors is one of the owners of the Dodgers. So you get stuff like that you can offer to people. It's pretty cool.
That's Magic Johnson.
Nope.
Okay. There's only about 72,000 owners of the Dodgers. I read the other day. Okay. I got $5,200. Can I the shoot it to you? Can you help me out? What if I give you $5,200?
Canadian, it'll be 3,000 by the time it gets there.
Dan Quinn has been our guest, man. This was great, Quinter. I knew it would be like pulling teeth trying to get you to talk. It was beautiful. Beautiful.
Did it without any cold beer, so it's not bad.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Get back out on the golf course. And what's your biggest memory then, Dan, you take away? I got to be a better host than that. That's a shit question, isn't it? Everyone asks that.
It's a tough thing. The biggest hockey memory, the best, coolest thing is still going to be probably having my kids, but that's all.
Different pile, though. Kids go in that pile. Yeah, hockey goes a different pile.
There's a lot of memories, all good ones. I mean, I hate to say it, but a freaking winning a celebrity tournament in Tahoe was pretty cool on national television. Nice. You know, and that one that Russ just mentioned, that my brother was there and went back to Mario's room and his parents were there. They're both passed now. And Tom, we had a cigar. You could smoke in rooms back then, cool. Just like sixth grade of us. But, and I'll never forget, that was, you know, Michael Jordan was there, Joe Namath and Mike Schmidt and Johnny Bench. And I was like,
wow.
And all of a sudden they knew who you were. You know, it was cool, you know, but
it was great for us hockey players. I'll tell you that much. It really was. It was a big fucking deal.
I got a picture of my first group that the first time I played there in 91 was, and they invite a lot. So my first group was Brett Hull and Tom Barrasso. You know, we were there together. So it was really cool.
Beachy was there a lot, wasn't he? Darren Veach?
Beachy got to the Dale Talon, Pierre LaRouche, Clark Gillies. You know, I got pictures on the back. We had the greatest times, you know, and then you get back to, and even we're talking about, me and Paul Coffey were talking about it just yesterday. You know, it's amazing how these guys are all friends because they all work out with guys, you know? So they go to different teams, but they're really friends. You know, we would be friends in the summer, but we were not, Russ, we couldn't even talk to each other in a warm-up. You know what I mean? Yeah. Your coach would be looking, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
Your teammates, what are you doing? Yeah. We got to kill that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
these guys are all like best buds and work out and train and share physios and Gary, you know what I mean? It's just bizarre now, the different mentality.
Remember that? Walking into a restaurant and the other team was there, we'd turn around, walk out. There's not a chance you would stay.
Oh, no shit.
Not a chance.
I love what you said about Mario. Hey, Mario, you want to go for a run? What? Yeah, not going to happen.
True story. We said, let's go do 2 miles. Yep. And Mount Lebanon High School is where the practice rink was. He walked the last, he did about a half a lap. He walked the last half lap. And they said, I'll see you guys when you're ready to go play golf. he was you know, phenomenal in training camp. So it was just the way it was.
Yep. Awesome time. Dan, this was great, man. We're going to get you on again for sure. You didn't say one of your greatest memories was you and I meeting on the pool deck at the Bellagio.
Yeah, because I was like Brett Hull. I don't remember.
Yeah. We'll see you later, Dan. Thanks a million. Fantastic. I know this is going to be a highly rated show for sure, man. Very, very funny. It's just terrific.
Thanks, guys.
Go look after your son. We'll talk to you again.
All right. Thanks, Russ. Thanks, guys.
Good luck. Good seeing you, Dan. Take care.
You got it. Anytime.
Awesome. That was awesome.
Thanks for being with us. Please be sure to subscribe to The Suspendables today and share the show with your friends and followers. And find out everything you need to know about the show on our brand new website, thesuspendables.com.